Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
From the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, who is ready to enlighten you with what's gone on this week in the Geekverse for news. Lots kind of went on, but not too much. It was kind of weird. So, been binge-watching lots of stuff, but it seems like DC kind of ran the table this week with fandom. So we'll give you this week's shakedown on what we saw or what DC gave us for the 24-hour extravaganza. But first, before we get to that, we'll, of course, also enlighten you with restaurants that helped me survive the COVID and, you know, just other nonsense that's been going on, what I'm binging, and, of course, our sponsor, who is Suzy Q's, the brilliant jewelry maker who comes up with some incredible works. Go to SuzyQ's.com. Check out what she's got on sale. She's always putting up new works, new visions of, like, grandiose design and so meticulous. I think she's making a full chainmail suit right now that I've seen her post pictures on her Instagram. So follow her, check her out, and yeah, you'll be happy that you do. Anyway, moving on. So this week, Netflix landed with Lucifer. Now, I'm not going to go into Lucifer yet because maybe you haven't binged it yet. There is only 8 episodes, and I know there's more that will be coming quickly after this release, but I'm not going to go into it yet. Don't want to give you any spoilers. Don't want to wreck it, but it is a very... I love the series. I love the show, and to say that I missed it would be an understatement just because of how... I don't know. It's just entertaining for me. I love the way the characters interact. I love Lucifer. He's a little bit different from how he was in the comic. He's got a little bit more inferiority complexes and more doubting in the show than he did in the comic. So it sometimes it's kind of fun to watch stories unfold and, you know, just kind of trying to keep up. And it's worth the watch. It really is. It's entertaining as hell. And you can't go wrong with it, in my opinion. But I could be wrong. But I won't give you any spoilers. I'm not going to go into a deep dive on that just yet, just because I want people to have actually a chance to watch it that may still do it just because of everything that's gone on. It landed, but you may not be able to watch it. The other thing that we're binging is The Legend of Korra, which I'm very intrigued by. Korra kind of... The second season kind of annoyed me. I didn't care for her character. I don't know if I do or I don't. I mean, the third chapter has been much more improved over the second. I kind of am really digging the storyline that they're doing now. But, I mean, it's entertaining. I never really was big into The Last Airbender, so watching this is kind of fresh. It's fun. It's definitely something that I need to probably go back and even, like, The Last Airbender, I didn't watch all of that series. I mean, I watched, you know, a few here and there, but it's never really been on my list, my radar. So I can't watch everything all of the time, contrary to what people think. So... Legend of Korra has actually been much more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. So, totally worth the watch so far. I'll let you know what I think when I'm done. When we're done. Yeah. Moving on. What else is going on? Before we get to the DC side. Dude. So, this cracked me up. And I'm curious how this is going to break down. But the big news... Powerpuff Girls live action series headed to the CW. Cartoon Network's 1998 classic, The Powerpuff Girls, is being adapted to a live-action series by the CW. Really? Come on. There's other things to adapt. I mean, I'm sure this is going to be interesting, but okay. I don't even know where to start on this, just because, I mean, it was an amazing, cute little cartoon with the little girls, but, okay, so my hang-up on this is just, the CW just has a tendency to just, you know, over-sexualize things, because, of course, right away I think of, like, Vampire Diaries and all of that, and the Powerpuff Girls are just, you know, these cute little girls that's being raised by their scientific dad, and, you know, he's trying to instill values into them, and I don't know how this is going to translate into a live-action CW show, because if they, I mean, there was once, I remember, that somebody posted pictures of the Powerpuff Girls all grown up, and the backlash from that was really angry and fighty, and they added a lot of people, and as they should, like I said, the Powerpuff Girls are just that. They're these cute little girls. So to over-sexualize and make them, you know, kind of, you know, sexualize is just... I really don't see this going well, and I hope that they're much more clever about it than other shows have been in the past. So, yeah, no actors, nobody's been named as far as who's doing what roles. I'm excited to see Mojo Jojo, honestly. I want to see what they do with a monkey. I honestly think this is kind of like CW trying to figure out what it's going to do with HBO Max pretty much all on the horizon. I mean, it's only a matter of time as we see, you know, the CW shows disappear, and we've talked about that a couple of times, and I'm honestly just the clock is ticking on that. And we'll get to the CW side of it here in a minute with the DC fandom, because that was... I'll get to it in a second. But with the CW, I think they're scrambling to try and figure out, okay, what are we going to fill if we lose all of the DC shows? Which I would say that is, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. So, give me your thoughts, give me your reactions. Maybe I'm just blowing this out of proportion and I'm thinking too much Vampire Diaries and, you know, all the other weird, you know, post-apocalyptic shows like The 100 and... Supernatural that I've seen, and maybe it will be just kind of some fun little tongue-in-cheek, but then that's the case, will it be successful? Who is their target audience for this show, this series? Because I don't know if they've thought it all the way through, but like I said, I could be wrong. I don't know, but that's just me. In other breaking news, the sequel to Death on the Orient Express... Murder on the Orient Express is got a sequel with Death on the Nile, and continuing with that story and that character is Kenneth Branagh playing Puar, and I am so excited about this. I really loved Murder on the Orient Express. It was so well done, and it was just it was. Packed full of celebrities, and it's kind of hard, I think, at this point to take an Agatha Christie novel, especially Orient Express, that has been done, redone, rethought, and reimagined I don't know how many times, and reprinted, and all of that. And I'm a huge Agatha Christie fan. I've really enjoyed a lot of her books and stories and all of that. So to see kind of a new modern take on it, and I think what Kenneth Branagh does for the characters, he's also directing and acting as the main character. It's the trailer we bounced on the web page. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. But the lineup, I mean, Gal Gadot, of course, the big headliner name, I think, in it. Russell Brand is in there, which always is odd to see him do like legitimate you know, serious acting roles. So we'll see. But those are just a couple. I mean, Annette Bening, of course, is in it, and it's just, it looks so glorious and thought out, and I love the way they did the set for the train and everything for the Orient Express. So my expectations for Death on the Nile is even, I guess, raised even higher. I mean, it's going to be kind of hard to compete because now you have this expectation of what you know. Are they going to follow suit? Is it going to be as twisty-turny? Are they going to change the ending? Are they going to kind of change the characters up? What are they going to do a little bit different to, you know, spice it up a little bit? I have absolute faith in this film. The strange thing is how quick this is set to release. They're saying October 23rd is the release date of this year. So we got a couple of months, and it should be hitting theaters. This is actually one of the first trailers I've seen for the film, because I know people were talking about it and, you know, it has been a little hush-hush, but I think as, you know, the world came to a screeching halt that everyone kind of like, we'll wait. So now that everything's started up, I haven't heard, speaking of theaters, how things went this weekend with AMC opening up. We may have a new meat and potatoes write-up, depending upon how that went this weekend, for you guys, because I know everyone has just been dying to get back into theaters. I know meat and potatoes have constantly said how they missed the theater, and that is, you know, absolutely evident, because you should see them. They're just like, no, I want to go out to the movies. I want to go out to the movies. And I know they're doing a lot of drive-in stuff. Film on the Rocks did a big, huge drive-in thing over the week. So that was kind of cool to see. I'm anxious to see more data and more information come through as AMC opened up and if everyone's kind of jumping on to checking out the older films. Come on, $5? Well, actually, 15 cents to see Ghostbusters. Total win. In. Or Empire? Absolutely. But the rest of the month, everything runs for $5, if I remember correctly, from that story we talked about last week. And maybe see what's hitting theaters now. Which brings us to this week's Shakedown. Yes, this week's Shakedown, I talk about DC fandom. And it kind of dominated the entire weekend, even though it was 24 hours. The build-up for fandom was rather large. I saw the commercials on the TV. Everyone was talking about it, especially with DC doing this huge culling of the herd for executives, in addition to shutting down their merch line. The DC's direct line is gone, so there goes the action figures, the toys, all of that is out. And it basically was kind of like, well, what is DC's plan? So the fandom, in answer, especially with DC not having any content for San Diego Comic-Con when they did their virtual con, it was kind of like DC said, okay, we're gonna do our own thing. I mean, they kind of pulled a PlayStation where they're like, you know, we're not going to be part of E3. We're out. We're going to do our own stuff. So I think this is kind of DC's way of separating themselves from everybody else to get the focus on them and to kind of pray, you know, give themselves their own little pat on the back. But I don't know if it necessarily worked. We saw a lot of movie trailers, and with the trailers, of course, came questions and oohs and ahs. I think the first ooh and ah, of course, was the Batman trailer. And my initial reaction to that was, okay, cool. Robert Pattinson does deliver a very, I mean, I want to say impressive glimpse into an early Bruce Wayne, year one, year two, which is what this film is kind of loosely based on. And I'm starting to draw parallels between it and a couple of other video games. Now, that said, we are going to get the Riddler, it looks like, as a villain, as you do the scene-by-scene breakdown for the trailer. And I do like the Batmobile concept, where it's basically a streetcar, and it's just been modified with the jet turbine. And I mean, it's got some very cool elements that you're like, okay, he's just starting out. There's, you know, going to be some bumps. There's going to be some bruises. It's not the polished Batman that we're all comfortable or familiar with. And, you know, putting Batman in a different light, let's face it, is kind of difficult. I only, of course, worry right away, are we going to get another origin story? I really, that's the one part about this that I'm kind of like, okay, we got it. Let's just, you know, gloss over it. Do we really need to revisit that? And hopefully that's not, you know, the case, that we do see some other storytelling involved. With the Riddler as the villain, I don't have a problem with that. I really am on board. I like the idea of the Riddler. He is kind of one of my favorite villains. I always, when Batman, I'm always like with Mr. Freeze or Riddler. I always think that they're just so undervalued, but they're such good villains. Cobblepot, I don't care about. I never liked the Penguin. I don't know if I actually, no, I don't even have his first appearance. I don't like the Penguin when I come to think of it. I mean, at the end of the day, he just is a gangster that looks like a penguin. And okay, fine, whatever. The other big release was the JLA trailer for the Snyder Cut. And we talked about it last week, and this was the one that everyone was kind of hanging on. We want to see this. What does it look like? And of course, I actually had to laugh because the music that came on, and I honestly thought at first when I heard it, it was Hallelujah by, I think it's Leonard Cohen, who did that version of it. It's out of Watchmen. It is the exact same song that's in Watchmen, which only makes sense because, you know, that's Snyder's baby. And I thought it was like a Watchmen, and I looked, and I'm like, oh, my God, that is it. It's the Justice League. So I think Snyder just really loves this song. And, of course, what's not to love? It is a very good rendition of it. And it's even funny because Patrick Wilson, who played Night Owl in Watchmen, of course, he's in Aquaman now as Ocean Master, he put, this song sounds familiar, and put a little owl emoji on his Instagram. So it's kind of a cute little nod to, you know, ah, I see what you did there. So the JLA trailer really paints an entirely different movie from the one you and I saw. I mean, it really looks darker. And so, I mean, it almost looks like there's an entirely different story to be told here. So it makes me really wonder how much did they change with the one that was released. So to see the trailer, I don't have that up on the page, but it's easy enough to find because it is everywhere. I think this is the one that everybody jumped on and was so anxious to see because of the story behind it with HBO Max, with Snyder and the controversy, and just a movie that everyone wanted to see but never thought they were going to be able to. Let's face it, I never thought I'd see this. I thought at one point it would just be a direct-to-video release and I'd be able to see it that way one day. Never did I think that it would be on HBO. The other story around that, though, they're saying it's so long that it's going to be broken up into four parts. So we're going to get quite the Justice League tale and see the whole thing. So Darkseid is the first image that you see in the trailer. And it is massive. It is impressive. And yeah, I honestly can't wait to see it. I may have to subscribe to HBO Max, even though I already have HBO. Cthulhu Country, by the way. Ooh. Anyway. Now, the other one, and like I said, there were just so many trailers that hit. The one trailer that I was just like, why, was the new James Gunn Suicide Squad. And right out of the gate, I'm like, okay, this, my expectations just got completely shattered on this because I'm not expecting a lot out of this because I think what it's going to do is suffer from Batman Forever. There are too many characters in the trailer alone. I got bored. I was just like, and this is a trailer, and I'm already bored with this. I mean, granted, we get Polka Dot Man, and I had to back up and watch it again. I'm like, seriously, Polka Dot Man? This is who you bring into the Suicide Squad? Out of all the characters that you could possibly throw in the Suicide Squad, Polka Dot Man? I understand that this may be like the previous Suicide Squad where they're building up, you know, the team, because they're just going to kill characters off left and right. So that may be the answer to this, but I mean, otherwise you're going to suffer like Batman Forever. There's too many characters. Yes, there are some established villains. Will Smith doesn't look like he's returning, but we get John Cena, which I don't know why. I mean, that poor man just wants a franchise. Give that man a franchise and just let him run. But all of these characters just crammed into the Suicide Squad, really, I don't get. And I know, and I have apps. Don't take me wrong. I honestly have faith in Gunn to do well with this project. But it just, there's just so many characters, and maybe they'll just have little bit parts. I'm sure the focus will be on Harley yet again, and I don't know if that's good or bad, depending upon how this breaks out. I mean, Birds of Prey was mediocre at best, and I don't know if it's Jared Leto's Joker that helped carry Harley in the Suicide Squad, which made her a little bit more interesting and dynamic. But, and then, of course, you have Deadshot, who's not in this film. So there are some back and forths. The other character that I was kind of curious about, it looks like Peter Capaldi of Doctor Who fame is playing the Thinker. Now, you may recall, if not, that's fine. The Flash did its version of the Thinker, which sucked. I mean, and I hate to say it, but that's probably one of the weakest seasons of the Flash CW show to date, because that was just, I got, again, bored with it, and it just didn't move to, you know, it just wasn't a worthy villain, or how they had portrayed him in the show. So I just kind of like, but to see him played by Peter Capaldi in Suicide Squad may or may not redeem the character. I mean, it's kind of neat, and the makeup and the imagery we get of the character looks compelling, to say the least, but how he's portrayed on screen and, you know, just basically how they build this character, I think is going to be the linchpin to all of it. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to sell a character's power who's thinking on a trailer. I'm just gonna stand here and scowl. I'm gonna look at you funny. Yeah, see, doesn't work. Well, and then you got Harley, who's beating people up with a baseball bat. See? Mass difference. So I don't know. The Suicide Squad, I just am not really sold on, but all I gotta say is, Polka Dot Man! Wow! They really just hit the brakes. The big trailer, though, that everybody probably was excited to see was the second Wonder Woman 1984 trailer that we got, and it's wow. It shows the progression of Kristen Wiig's character as she embraces the cheetah character, and her progression from, you know, the beginning to the end, because we see like this natural step in the trailer. Vast differences in appearance as the trailer goes. So this looks to be one epic fight between Wonder Woman, Cheetah, the evolution of the character. Wow. After I saw it, and I just kind of like, wow, that really is Kristen Wiig. What they did with makeup and her just in the trailer for the character was a great representation of the character. I was totally blown away. And Kristen Wiig is just a phenomenal actress already, besides the Ghostbusters snafu, and whatever, if I don't even know if she's going to be in that MacGruber series that they're talking about, but that's another topic. I don't know, however, after watching the Wonder Woman trailer, if we really need Steve Trevor. And I know he's probably there more for comic relief, and that's okay, but I don't know. He dead, Jim. Maybe it'll be worth it. I don't know, but all in all, from just like the Wonder Woman side of it, I'm more anxious and excited about that than I am to see, you know, Steve Trevor running around with a flag-inspired fanny pack. It's just, why? The other story that came out of the film side of it was The Rock, and he basically stole DC's thunder by posting on his Twitter his Black Adam concept art and just how excited he is to finally have Black Adam coming to the big screen. And you know what? I am absolutely on board for this. Just one of the best villains in the DC universe is Black Adam, and it's not just because of his godlike powers and all of that, but he basically has, in his mind, no restrictions. He's going to do whatever it takes to win the day, to save the people, to protect his nation, and just to see that kind of dedication from a character in the DC universe is tremendous. And I'm really anxious and excited to see what he looks like on screen. Because, I mean, The Rock is already massive, and now you're going to make him a god? Wow. This, yay. Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't happen soon enough. So we'll see. And he may show up in Shazam, which, of course, also named their sequel for Shazam 2, The Fury of the Gods. So I don't know if this is going to, or how this is going to play with Black Adam, if Black Adam is going to show up. But, of course, I'm sure Fury of the Gods has something to do with the gods that give Shazam his powers and how that all plays. And are we going to see other dimensional stuff that we kind of do in the comics? There are a lot of weird little things that we kind of can extract from this. Unfortunately, we don't have any information at all. But, of course, I don't think we would, because November 4th, 2022 is the release date for the next Shazam film. So, I mean, there's a significant amount of time for trailers, for info. But they were very anxious and excited to drop the title, which, you know, rightfully so. I'd be all over it, especially with, you know, Black Adam coming out, The Rock completely on board. And the art, the character design is spectacular. Oh, my God. I'm just like, yay. So now I need to find my Shazam 12 for sure. I forget Cheetah's first appearance in Wonder Woman, but it's been floating around suddenly because it's kind of a difficult issue to find. Yes, that's correct. Comics that I actually do not have. I know that kind of comes as a rarity and a shock to you, but it can happen. So, that said, the other downer side to this, and actually, I don't know if it's a downer, but the concept art, it wasn't even like a image of it, an actual image. It's just kind of the art of what the new Flash costume for the new movie is going to be. It looks a little lighter weight. It looks more kind of basically ripped right out of the CW series for Flash. And I just kind of like, okay, give me something from the new movie, but that's kind of all we got on it. And I'm like, okay, fine. I get it. You may not have anything, and you're just kind of putting something out there just to tease and entice people, since the Flash film is supposed to pull all of the DC films kind of into a cohesive thought, similar to what Marvel has done. Flash is supposed to be that cornerstone that is going to pull all of the DC films together and make it one cohesive universe. Will they be successful? Good question. Speaking of Flash, going over to the CW side of it and TV, we do get a trailer for season 7 of The Flash with everything that went on. The gentleman that plays the Elongated Man got sacked for some disparaging comments that he made, some racial slurs and inappropriate comments. He has been let go. So that kind of threw a monkey wrench into a huge story arc that was going to happen for season 7. Sue Dibny, now Darabon, who in the comics marries Elongated Man, is still part of the show and will continue on with the crew. And I guess there's going to be some other character that is a regular that will be taking over the overall story arc that was supposed to involve Elongated Man. I guess it's been adjusted a little bit, and we're going to see a different take on what the original plan was. The production staff says, actually, it turned out to be a much better emotional, cohesive story arc than originally with Ralph. So I'm anxious to see it. I'm curious more than anything. I was starting to get kind of comfortable with Ralph on the show. I've never been a huge Elongated Man fan. I don't know. Ralph has always just been kind of one of those filler characters for me. I know he's like a detective on par with Batman, and he has some very impressive deductive skills, but in my mind, he always was just kind of like the poor man's Reed Richards. And, you know, that can happen. That's fine. There's room for everybody, right, to play? Sure. But I don't know. I did like his portrayal on Flash a lot more than what I thought I was going to. And he kind of was a little bit more than comic relief. He actually had some decent stories around him, and he was starting to, you know, turn into a worthwhile hero for me. But now that has been sacked. I don't know what the character that they're going to be using as a season regular for this story arc, which raises the question of who of the season regulars will we see again. So are they going to bring Wally back and actually give him a story, because they kind of just ditched Kid Flash? Will we see more of Wells and his progression as Pariah, and kind of like a redemption for him, maybe? All of this is supposed to play into the Big Bad's storyline for the overall season of 7. And yeah, we'll see. But as far as the rest of the information for the CW shows, I guess, and I didn't see it because there was just so much going on and trying to keep track of the panels and all of that. I listened to the Neil Gaiman panel, which was enlightening, but I missed the Batwoman panel. And I don't know if I really want to know what's going to go on with Batwoman just yet, because I don't think they know as far as how they're going to go forward without Ruby Rose, if they've got a storyline or a plot or how that's going to pan out. But I guess they did discuss that it is a go. They have their Batwoman and all of everything is in place. They just didn't go into specifics. The other story that, I mean, for the CW season, I mean, Superman and Lois, which this broke last year, were going to get their own series. And, okay, I mean, Lois and Clark, Superboy, Superman, Smallville, I think we've gotten our fill of Superman stories. And let's be fair, as vanilla as Supergirl is, she has used a lot of Superman's villains and storylines and has carried on the tradition of the S quite effectively from all intents and purposes. So now we're going to get Superman and Lois in their own series. So is there enough room in the CW for two soups? I mean, maybe? I don't know. I do like the actor that is Superman. And Lois is, I'm impartial towards. I like the chemistry between the two characters. They do seem to get along quite famously. So I'm good with that. But at the same time, I'm just kind of like over soups. Because there just seems to have been so many different series of him over the years. So okay, as neat as it is, fine, whatever. But we didn't get any trailers. We didn't get any additional information from them on that particular show. It just kind of seemed like they fell down in the area of TV. Now, they did mention that there will be another DC fandom coming up, and it's not that far off, just a couple months. So maybe there'll be more information released on the shows and the comics and what the state of the union is for DC at that point. The other side of it, and what ended up the, I don't know, I think we talked more about this among friends in the group than anything else, was on the video game side of it and Gotham Knights, as we see what the world would be like without Batman. Evidently, there's something called Code Black. If Bruce is killed or his identity is discovered, it's basically slash and burn and run like hell. So the trailer for the game is a, I got moved, but Batman is flat. He's just, it's basically his last will and testament saying, if you're seeing this, I'm dead. They know who I am. I've burnt the Batcave, and good luck. Just basically, and I guess when you think about it, what else would Batman say? It's the end of the, you know, his war. He lost. And you guys, unfortunately, are stuck picking up the pieces. The trailer looks very Rocksteady, even though it's not produced by Rocksteady. The mechanics of gameplay look to be about the same, at least a lot of the cutscenes that we saw. You do get the option, it looks like, to play four different characters out of this. You got Nightwing, you got Red Hood, Batgirl, and Robin. As far as which Robin, it's a very good question. My money says it is probably Damian, just based on the suit. And, of course, Nightwing is Dick, and the Batgirl is, and I'm not sure which Batgirl she's going to be, if she's more like the teeny bopper one that we've seen lately, or more of the classic version of Batgirl. But the gameplay, you do get to play two characters at the same time. I'm wondering if you get to actually pick your characters, or if you do, you know, the story arc of it, that you integrate and kind of alternate between different characters as the story progresses. The big hook on this whole thing that got me at the end, because as I'm watching the trailer, I'm like, okay, I'll play it. It's reminiscent of Rocksteady, a Batman game without Batman, because he's like, you know, head to the clock tower. There's gear there. It's older gear, but, you know, this is the best place for you guys to start. Good luck. The clincher is at the end, and we see the Court of Owls. And that right there is what got me all kinds of tingly. Because Court of Owls is, I don't want to say it's my favorite Batman story, but it's like one or two. I mean, you've got Hush and you've got Court of Owls. Those two stories just encompass so much of the Batman lore, and how those stories were built and executed is phenomenal. You need to read both. Anyway. We get the Court of Owls. So we see the storage facility that they have, where all of the Talons through the decades and through the centuries that they have frozen. So I'm thinking they have like an unlimited reservoir of Talons that you'll be facing off against. And of course, the regular Talon that you see in the comics, and that comes out of the Court of Owls. So it really, I was like, oh. That said, I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to play it. But it may suck. I really hope it doesn't, because I really want this game to go well. I really want it to stay in the tradition of Rocksteady. Now that said, where's Rocksteady? They're on the other side of this. And this one got buried a little bit deeper than I thought. There was a trailer for it, a rather lengthy trailer, but there was a trailer for it nonetheless. Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, is Rocksteady's game that they've been working on. So the trailer was kind of long. It's very interesting, and it's a continuation of the Arkham universe that Rocksteady has already established. So it's taking elements from the Batmans and building off of that to create the Suicide Squad, that world. Of course, Harley and that world building doesn't change. In fact, I would almost expect all of the gameplay from Batman to be exactly the same, how they're going to work that or who they're going to work into it is kind of a mystery. But I don't know. Because, I mean, when you're dealing with Suicide Squad, I mean, I guess there could be different missions that you're going on or breaking out of Arkham or interactions with Amanda Waller or, you know, collecting team members. I don't know how Rocksteady is going to build this game, but I have faith in them because of the success that they had with the Batman series. Would they let us down for Suicide Squad? I guess we won't be able to find this out until 2022. It is set to be released, and it will be on all platforms. So whatever Xbox series they've got, PlayStation, of course, PC, the whole kit and caboodle. Yeah, so that just kind of was interesting to me. Anyway, that kind of wraps up the high points. The panels were okay, and that's kind of what I expected. So that's this week's Shakedown. Now, following up with the Shakedown, Brett Leader 1 and I got together this weekend, and, you know, we were talking about our plans for the cons and the convention series and what we're going to do next year, which ones do we want to see, and the months and all of that. And what we're starting to see is cons going virtual and now are trying to figure out how they're going to recover or recoup money. And some of them have come up with some interesting ideas, but I'm not sure I like the way the trend is going, especially when it comes to the celebrity side of it. So you've got celebrities who you can book to have like a 3-minute conversation with. And I think that's close to, I saw one on the high side, and I think it was Shatner, for 3 minutes was $300, which it's Shatner. I get it. I understand. But I think this is a horrible trend setting idea, because $300 for 3 minutes just seems absolutely ludicrous. I mean, yeah, it's Shatner and you get, you know, one-on-one, but $300? And I'm already starting to see an uptick on celebrity photos that are signed and mailed out to you, which I know there's a lot of, you know, autograph chasers out there, and I've been one myself. There have been times where I'm like, okay, I want that autograph. I need to have that one added to the collection, or just the interaction. You know, you collect celebrities in your own way, whether it be pictures or just going up in that, you know, 3-5 second interaction with them is kind of like, okay, I met them, they seemed cool, you know, I'm going over to the other table now. The trend that I'm starting to see, and most of it's been like with Doctor Who, but I'm starting to see an uptick for signed photographs from the companions. It's not even Doctor Who alums, or, you know, actual doctors. And I want to say that Brett said he saw one doctor that was asking for, you know, some money. But I've never seen in the wild at cons, I've never seen a doctor make an appearance or sign for less than $100. But now with this new situation, they're charging, I think he said, anywhere from $120 on up for the signature and the picture and all that. That's not including postage. That's not including taxes. That's not including any of it. So right away, more money is being spent and your interaction is even less. Because as much as I want the signed picture, as much as I want to add it to the collection and, you know, they go up on the wall, half of it, again, is the chance to talk to them. That's what I'm really after. Sure, I get a signed item, which may or may not be important. But, I mean, I don't usually go for the pictures on the table. I've got something that I'm bringing. So, like, when I met Barrowman years ago in Chicago, I had his first article or interview in the Doctor Who magazine. So I had him sign that. The autograph that I had Clara sign was another Doctor Who magazine, and it was the Christmas special. And it was a great spotlight on her and her character in the show, and she even commented on it. She's like, wow, you know, she was impressed to see it. So whereas this may be an answer for some collectors and it may scratch that convention itch, I think it's setting a bad precedent in regards to the average con goer, because I don't know. I was just put off by that. If I'm going to go to a virtual con, and I know DC is, I know all of the cons are trying to figure out how they're going to recoup losses, and face it, all of us have been impacted by no cons, no traveling, the COVID crisis, crisis on infinite COVIDs. But when I don't know if this is necessarily the answer. I think there's a better approach. There's a better idea. There might be. They're at home, and you're going to charge me $300 to just talk to you for 3 minutes. That's $100 a minute. That is just wow. I am impressed. I wish I could charge rates like that. But those are the things that just kind of settle ill with me. And I hope that this isn't the answer. I honestly hope that this isn't the direction that cons go, but that remains to be seen. At any rate, we are already making our plans for next season, and hopefully, fingers crossed, everything works out the way we want so that we can get some con coverage for you guys, get some pictures, get back to, you know, the way things used to be, and I do believe that they will be back to normal. I wouldn't say normal, I guess, but how they used to be. They may be a little bit modified. They may be a little more different than what you're used to, but it will return. In comic book news this week, the story that we have talked endlessly about finally lands. No, I'm not talking about The Last Ronin. In fact, that got delayed. But The Three Jokers finally lands this week, and there are a plethora of different covers, and rightfully so. They are really pushing this story. I'm excited. I can't wait to read it, and I'm going to be all over this. It will be my number one pick for this week's top five. Of course, check out what the rest of my picks are, because there are a couple of other books that are coming in this week that I'm like, about time. So we're starting to see the shipping schedule and everything kind of level out, if you will. And thank God, because believe it or not, I have actually gotten through my stack of books. I don't know what I'm going to read next. I'm looking at trades. I'm looking at all sorts of dear, just weird stuff to read. And I do have something coming up that we will be promoting, a horror novel. But yeah, an anthology. But that's all I can give you right now. Small little taste. What else? That's kind of it. It's such a weird week. Seems like so much for DC, and the whole shakedown is just nothing but DC, but that's kind of how that goes. And yeah, that maybe I'm just going to have to go out on adventures so that I have something else to inform you about. And that leads us to, you guessed it, restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. Every week I've concentrated or focused on different restaurants, different foods, things that have enticed me while we've been in lockdown, while we've been in isolation. And this week is no exception. In fact, I was trying to think of who I wanted to talk about, because I have gone to a lot of different places. But I don't want to give you names of restaurants or establishments just for the sake of names. Because the last thing, I would rather not do a restaurant that helped me survive the COVID if I had no one to suggest. I don't want to just throw out names that you're going to go and go, God, what the hell is Smurf thinking? That's not what this is about. These are legitimate restaurants that I would recommend. If you ask me, where do you want to go? I would say this is where we're going to go. And this restaurant actually is no different. It's not even a restaurant. It's more of a sandwich joint. In fact, it is a sandwich joint. One of the places that I used to go to a lot back in the day, and with everything going on, I totally was like, I need to go. And it's Pat's Philly Cheesesteaks. Pat's has been around since 1999, and I've actually met the father and son team that started Pat's. They actually had a restaurant that was downtown, right off of Market Street and 16th, 15th. It was right there next to one of the bars. The pizza joint was there, and they were downstairs in the basement. But I've met and I've known Pat and his father for a number of years. They're great guys. They're out of Philly, and they really are down to earth kind of guys. So when they came here in 1999, they want to introduce a East Coast style sandwich, and there is a difference. And I know a lot of people are like, no, you can't do East Coast here. There's something about the water or the bread or just the atmosphere. But I can say with absolute conviction that this is as close to an East Coast sandwich as you're going to get. I know you're not going to be able to reproduce a Philly style cheesecake outside of Philly. It's really difficult. But these guys come as close as you're going to get. With or without, it's just so tasty. But they also do other style like hoagies and different burgers, subs, and they even got wings. So the baker that they have working for them for the bread, because it's all made there, their meatballs are done there. A lot of the ingredients and materials used for their sandwiches are all made in-house, which I think sets them apart from like your other chains, your other restaurants like Jimmy John's. At the end of the day, yes, they're independently owned, they're all franchised, but they're all getting their materials and their ingredients from the same distributor. They're still, the same sandwich. Pat's definitely is using, the best ingredients that are possible and to make their end product there. It's not like, throw it in the micro, warm it up, throw it on a sandwich, okay? It's not like, Subway, where all of us are like, so sick of that. These guys got the science down. They know what they're doing, and they're really my first choice when it comes to sandwiches if I'm really going to go all out for a sandwich. And let's face it, with the COVID, I went quite a lot for sandwiches because they're simple, they're easy, and it's, a lot less difficult when you're, trying to just find something to eat. And it's simple. And you really, it's filling, it's great. I can't say enough about Pat's and how much I truly, truly enjoy them right now. So, in fact, they'll probably be for lunch today. Now, they're not doing any dine-in, and they've got different locations throughout town. I know there's one, there was one over off of Arapahoe Road. There is, like, the Staple Shop, which the one I frequent is over off of Quebec and Iliff. And that one, that address actually is 7419 East Iliff in Denver. You can give them a call, 303-873-0907, to do a pickup. They do deliver, and they're using a lot of different. They're using Grubhub. I think they got DoorDash in there as well, Uber Eats. And I did say Grubhub. If I didn't, they've got Grubhub. Yeah, that's an easy one. Check out their menu. They are online, and it's worth it. You know what? At least experiment. And if you have, like I say, I'm not saying absolutely best cheesesteak in town, because that's another fight, because there are so many other ones that are there. I would put them up in the top class, absolutely, without argument, but give them a try. Give it a sample. Let me know your thoughts, because I'd be hard-pressed to find someone here that can deliver a sandwich from there. And that's my restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. The rest of the story is just that, the end. There's nothing really else going on out there. I'm even perusing the internet right now to see if something else has popped or has caught my eye. And there really hasn't. Schools started back up, so everything kind of slowed down. DC's event kind of took the wind out of the weekend. Yeah. So that wraps this week up. Give us a like. Give us a share. Thank you for listening. Please check out our sponsor, Suzy Q's, online, suzyqs.com, or their Facebook page, which is always linked in the description as we post this. If you have any comments or questions, I'm Smurf. I'll answer anything, so shoot it my way. Because in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.